Okay, let's start our overview and review of Sefer Yehoshua. We started off a couple of months ago with an introduction, and Baruch Hashem, we've had the schus to discuss the 24 prakim of Yehoshua. Before we get into the next Sefer Navi, Sefer Shoftim, let us think back to the stories and some of the highlights that we've discussed over the past couple of weeks. So if you remember, Perek Aleph was about a continuation of the Torah. The Navi started off with Vav, Vayehi, Acharei Mos Moshe Eved Hashem. It was after Moshe Rabbeinu has died, at the end of the Torah, Yehoshua is a continuation. The Gemara even says that even if we wouldn't have sinned, the Torah and Yehoshua would have been given. Even if all of the other Nevi'im wouldn't have been given, Yehoshua is really a Hashlama, a completion of the entire Torah. So after Moshe Rabbeinu dies, Moshe is called in Perek Aleph Eved Hashem. What does it mean, Eved Hashem? We discussed, the Radak says, somebody who uses all of his faculties, all of his kochot that Hashem has given in to serve Hashem. That is the definition of Eved Hashem. Fascinatingly, Moshe is called Eved Hashem in Perek Aleph. We have to wait until all the way at the end, Perek Chaf Dalet of Sefer Yehoshua, Yehoshua is called Eved Hashem. Yehoshua Eved Hashem all the way at the end. So we go from Moshe Eved Hashem, Yehoshua fulfilling all of his tasks, Yehoshua becomes the Eved Hashem said at the end of the Sefer. Three times in the Perek Aleph, Hashem tells Yehoshua Ben Nun, be strong, you could do it. Chazak Ve'emas, you could lead this nation. I know it's going to be tough, but you could do it. And he says, Chazak Ve'emas, ki atah tanchilus am hazeh, I have faith in you, though Moshe Rabbeinu was not zochet to take Am Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, but you will be able to do it. He also, the famous pasuk, the most famous pasuk in Perek Aleph, maybe in all of Sefer Yehoshua, is V'hagisa bo yomam v'layla, right, which is one of the sources for Talmud Torah that is nowhere in the Torah. It is found in Sefer Yehoshua, and we've learned the Tosefta in Sanhedrin, which notes that arguably Yehoshua ben Nun was the busiest person in the history of the Jewish people. The busiest. Not only was he the Gadol Adar, not only was he the king, he had the status of the king, but he had to split up all the property of Eretz Yisrael. Every Jew had to get what was magia to them and what they deserved. And he was given the mitzvah of a Hagisa bo yom v'layla. He was the one. You have to serve HaKadosh Baruch, you have to learn day and night. So there are no excuses. Like the Gemara says in Yuma Daf Lamed Hey, that Hillel went up on the roof in the snow to listen. Hillel's Machai of those who are poor, and Rabbi Elazar ben Charsum is Machai of the rich, and Yosef is Machai of the handsome. Yehoshua ben Nun is Machai of all the busy people out there. Right? He is the one that is commanded to learn. And if he could do it, we could all do it. So Yeshua tells the Am, okay, we have to get ready. In a couple of days, we are going to go into Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, and he tells Reuven, Gad, and half of the Sheva Menashe, you coming with us. Remember, you promised, right, even though you're going to get the land back on the east side of the Jordan, but you will get that only after you fulfill your promise and come through and help us conquer Eretz Yisrael. The last pasuk in the Perek was the source for the principle of Morid B'malchus. Call Isha Shoyam Respicha, they, Bnei Yisrael, responded to Yehoshua, if anybody doesn't obey you, they're going to be Chayiv Misa. Right? That is the source for the principle of anybody who rebels against the king. Anytime in history, they are Chayiv Misa, L'chol Asher Tesavenu, you must, Yehoshua, everything you say, we will listen to, Rak Chazak Ve'ematz. So that is all Perek Aleph, gets things started in the Sefer. Perek Beis, Yehoshua Ben Nun, getting ready to cross the Yarden, sends out Meraglim, sends out two spies to see what's going on in the west side of the Jordan, see how the nations there, what they have heard about Eretz, about the Bnei Yisrael. We discuss then the Malbim. The Malbim says, Yehoshua ben Nun is sending Meraglim. Didn't it not work out so well the first time? Right? He was one of the two that it was okay, but the other 10 were no good. And yet, Yehoshua ben Nun sends out Meraglim. So the Malbim lifts to us five differences between the 12 Meraglim that Moshe Rabbeinu sent out and the two Meraglim that were sent out here. And he learns it from every two words, every word in the Psukim. Meraglim, they were sent out with a specific purpose. Cheresh, they were sent out in private. Nobody knew about it without any fanfare. Lamar, ghost with a specific, types of people that were sent. And only two people, and not 12 people. Many differences, because Yehoshua ben Nun knew that this was something that was going to have different results than the previous one. So he sends, according to Chazal, he sends Pinchas and Kalev, and they go and they come to Yericho. Yericho is the first city that they're going to conquer, as we know. They come to the house of Rachav. Rachav Hazona, whether it means literally Zona or it means Zona. She was Mocheres Mizonos. Either way, they come to Rachav Hazona, who, according to Chazal, ended up being Yeshua's wife. Ultimately, she converted, and Yeshua married her. But they come into her house, and the king of Yericho hear about it, that she has these spies. She hides them, as we know, and she helps them escape. And she says, you just have to promise me that when you come into Eretz Canaan, right, you're going to protect me and my family. And they promise her, they do what's with her, what's called chesed and emes. They thank her for, they have akaras hatov. And she, ultimately, the Gemara says, has neviim and great people that come out from her. But that is Rachav. When we go through the story exactly, that she hid them, it says that she hid him, not them. What do you mean, him singular? We discussed Chazal that maybe Pinchas was invisible, in that he was like a malach. And Rachav gives them the report that everybody there is scared, because they've heard of everything that happened to Am Yisrael. They heard about what Hashem did with Kriyas Yamsuf and Makas Bechoros. And they said, right when they heard that, they said, good news. They were ready to go back. They hide out up top on the roof until the enemy goes out, and they think that they are running after the two spies, but really they were up on Rachav's roof. They go to the forest and they go down the rope, as we saw the Chazal say, the same rope that she used to bring in people who she was Mizana with. She let down these escapees, the same exact tool that she used for sin, she used for a mitzvah. And that ultimately is a tshuva gemura. She lets them out and they escape. They come back to Yeshua and say, green light, coast is clear, we could go and conquer, they are scared of us. So we get into Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel, Yeshua ben Nun wakes up early, and he says, okay, we have to get ready to cross the Yarden. The Radak goes through the dates here. The date specifically said here is it was the 10th of Nisan, so you work backwards. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu died on Zion Adar, because it was a month of Avelus for Moshe Rabbeinu, and then 3 days, Yeshua says, another 3 days, you're going to cross the Yarden. So that's what he gets them ready for. In 3 days, you're going to cross the Yarden, and this is how it's going to work, says Yehoshua. The Kohanim are going to carry the Aron, and they're going to go into the water. The second they go in the water is going to split, and then all the rest of Am Yisrael is going to go through. They're going to take their feet out of the water is going to close, then the Kohanim magically fly with the Aron, because they're on the wrong side. They fly with the Aron across into Eretz Canaan. That is what is going to happen. Yeshua forecasts that. He tells them what's going to be. And it actually, as we know, takes place. This is the only time in history that we know of that the Kohanim carried the Aron. Usually the Levim carried everything in the Midbar. Here the Kohanim did. If you look in the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs formulates the mitzvah of carrying as the Kohanim carrying it. And the Ramban can't believe it. He says, no, that's an exception. It's an exception to the rule. It didn't always happen. But either way, that's what happened here. Machlokas Rambam and the Ramban about carrying the Aron. The Briska Rav had a chiddush about Nesias Aron, as we mentioned. But Yeshua ben Nun, even before that, what does he do? He brings all of Klal Yisrael close and says, also another difference, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention, he says, follow the Aron. The Aron is usually in the middle, between the Shvatim. Here it goes first. What's the message, says the Lubavitcher Rebbe? Because the Aron is a microcosm of physical and spiritual. It's made up of physical raw materials, wood and gold, and it has measurements, and yet everything about the Aron is supernatural. It didn't take up any space in the Kodesh Kodashim. It was too heavy for normal people to carry, and yet they carried it. So it was natural and supernatural. Yeshua ben Nun says, let the Aron go first here. Because now that you're going into the land of Israel, no more Nisim, no more Mon, and Ananim, and Be'er. You're going to live a natural life. You're going to work the land, and the supernatural is going to be behind the scenes. Just like the Aron. He says, V'alach t'macharev, follow the Aron. Keep your distance. So that's what happened. The Aron went first. Yeshua ben Nun tells them to sanctify themselves, because soon it's going to be a miraculous event. Yeshua, though, first calls them right before they go through and says, go Shuhena in Pasuk Tes, and Rashi quotes that all of the Jewish people fit in between the Aron poles. A miracle, right? How could you fit millions of people into two little poles? So, it was a miracle. Why they need to do that? Yeshua ben Nun says, you better have Achdus before you go into Eretz Yisrael. Brings everybody together, fit together, realize that from now on, the principle of Arvus, the principle of Kol Yisrael, Rebim Zelazeh, is about to kick in, and therefore he brings them all, puts them close, and Everybody goes into Eretz Yisrael. As the Kohanim put their feet in, and they go. This is, as we mentioned, much different than what happened in Sefer Shmos. In Sefer Shmos, Nachshon ben Aminadav had to go in up to his neck, his shtablus. They had to do something. Here, Hashem did it all. Kohanim put their feet in, boom, and Hashem split it. Right? This is because why? So some of the Mefarshim explain, now Bnei Yisrael have the Torah. Before, they didn't have the Torah yet, by Koreas Yamsuf. So here they have the schus of the Torah that enabled the miracle to then take place. So they cross, and as they're crossing, right after they're crossing, Yeshua ben Nun says, now we're in Perek Dalet, take stones. Take stones, you're going to build a stone structure as a remembrance to what happened here. How many times? So according to Chazal, they built 3 stone structures. One, they built 12 stones in the Yarden. In the Yarden. One, after they crossed the Yarden in Gilgal, and the other one they built in Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, by the brachos and the klalos, the blessings and the curses. But they took stones here. What are all these for? They took the stones as if, we mentioned, some suggest a beautiful idea, it's like a mezuzah for Eretz Yisrael. When you have a mezuzah on your door, people know what you're about. You have Shema, you have Ahaya, that tells us. Right, you see that? You know it's a Jewish home. You know it's people who believe. So we put a mezuzah on Eretz Yisrael. As we went in, we stood up these stones. Yeshua ben Nun wrote the Torah on the stones. That's our mezuzah. There's a mezuzah to Eretz Yisrael. And as we know, we went in on the 10th of Nisan. Why? 3 separate areas of stones. So we mentioned then also a beautiful Maharsha, which says it connects to the 3 basic tenets of what we have to believe in. There is a God. He instructed us, the Torah. And there's schar va'onesh, there's reward and punishment. Right? And he connects each of those. That was the Maharsha in Sota, Daf Lamed Hei, about the 3 piles of stones connected to the 3 major yesodos ha'emunah. So Am Yisrael is in, Baruch Hashem, we crossed the Yarden on the 10th of Nisan, and we describe the event. Parakei, what's the first thing we have to do when we come in? We all have to get bris milah. Right? We have to get bris milah because nobody got bris milah except for Shevet Levi. Nobody got bris milah during the time of the Midbar. Why not? Why didn't anybody get bris milah? So the Gemara discusses, because number one, it might have been dangerous. They were traveling. And number two, there was a special wind, the Ruach Tzfonis, that used to blow, that used to be a healing wind, and it didn't blow the entire time in the Midbar. Why? Because Hashem didn't want the Anani HaKavod to dissipate and to blow away. So he didn't have the wind blow. So that's why they didn't do Mila. The big kasha that the Ritva in Yavamas asks is, Hashem could have had the wind blow and not move the Anani HaKavod. Right? He didn't need that to not make the wind blow. Okay. Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't want to do that miracle. But either way, as we know, the majority of the Jew, Am Yisrael, did not get bris milah throughout the 38 years, the last 38 years that were in the Midbar. So the first thing, right, when they cross, Hashem says to Yoshua, be mal, everybody needs a bris milah because in 4 days from now, we are going to do Karban Pesach, right, on Erev Pesach, and you're not allowed to eat Karban Pesach if one doesn't have a bris milah, if one is an Arel. So that's why Bnei Yisrael all get bris milah from Yehoshua ben Nun. Did he mal everybody? That's a lot of milas. Or once he maled some people, they could do others. But this is what is done for the first time, again, in years. They get bris milah, and as they're healing, they are ready to eat from the Karban Pesach. So the Torah says they make Pesach for the first time in 40 years. They eat the Karban Pesach. On the second day of Pesach, they eat from the new grain in Eretz Yisrael. So we know every year there's a halacha called Chadash, the Isra of Chadash, and not allowed to eat from the new grain until after the second day of Pesach. So the mon lasted for a little over a month. Even though usually the mon throughout the Midbar spoiled, if I gather too much, it's spoiled. The nace was from the day that Moshe Rabbeinu died, Zayin Adar, that was the last day the mon fell. It lasted, and there was enough mon all the way until the second day of Pesach. And the Navi describes here, that's when the mon stopped falling. Because now they could eat from the new grains of Eretz Yisrael. So the mon start falling that day, and they ate from the new grains. Baruch Hashem. We're in, and then the end of Parakeh discusses Yehoshua's mysterious meeting with the Malach Hashem. Right, there's a mysterious angel that stands in front of Yehoshua, and he tells Yehoshua, take off your shoes. You're standing in an Anmas Kodesh. He takes off his shoes. Yeshua says, who are you? Are you for Hashem or are you for us? So there's no real answer given. It's a mysterious meeting. Chazal pick up on the fact that maybe he was telling him, you have to keep learning Torah on the battlefield. But that is the mysterious meeting, getting ready for what's going to happen in Yericho. We discussed then also why Dafka do we take off our shoes by a Makam Kadosh, what the symbolism of that is. Perek Vav, we get into Yericho. Yericho, what happens in Yericho? As we know, Yeshua gives the command from Hashem to Am Yisrael that you have to walk around the city once a day with shofars for 6 days, and on the seventh day you walk around seven times. Why is this dafka the formula? The Radak says, because Hashem said so. We have no idea why they had to walk around for 7 days, and why on the seventh day they have to walk around seven times. This is what Hashem said to do, so this is what we do. Yericho was the first city conquered by Am Yisrael. The first one. There's a beautiful Ravid in Meseches Tamid who pointed out that Yericho has certain qualities about it similar to Yerushalayim. The Mishnayos and Tamid tell us that you could smell the Ketores in Yerushalayim and in Yericho. The gorgeous smell of, the wonderful smell of the Ketores. You could hear certain sounds in the Beis HaMikdash and in Yericho. Why? Because Yericho is the Truma. It's the first, so to speak, of Eretz Yisrael, and that was the first conquering that we did. What did we do? As we know, the Nes occurred, they went around seven times, and on the seventh day, the walls fell down. Not as much fell down, as we know, sunk into the ground. There was no door. These huge walls, it sunk into the ground. The people of Yericho ran away. They were crazy. They didn't know what was going on. So they ran, and they were scared out of their wits. Yeshua ben Nun makes a cherem. He says, nobody's allowed to take from the spoils of Yericho. Was that a good idea, bad idea? Question in Chazal, why he did that. Moshe Rabbeinu might have done it. Should he have copied him? Should he not? We discussed that at the time. But either way, he did it, which led to trouble in the next parak. And at the end of the parak, we know Yeshua cursed anyone who rebuilt Yericho. Arur, anybody who rebuilds Yericho, his children are going to die. And later on in Sefer Malachim, there was a man named Chiel, who rebuilt Yericho, and all of his sons died during the process. The first hammer blow, his oldest son died. The last hammer blow, his youngest son died. And that is used by the Bali Musar to say that you can have a great miracle happening in front of your eyes. If you don't want to believe it, you won't believe it. His first son died by the first hammer blow. Don't you get it? Yeshua ben Nun's a curse? He didn't get it until all of his sons had died. But either way, that was the curse that Yeshua sets up at the end of Perek Hay. Good, Perek Vav, I'm sorry. Perek Zayin, so now we get into the post-Yericho experience. Yeshua ben Nun thinks he's on top of the world. So what happens? He sends a couple of men to go defeat Ai, because Ai, not such a big battle, he sends some men. The problem is they come back in defeat. They come back in defeat. Terrible. 36 people are killed. So what exactly is meant by this? Right? By Yaakov Mimanshei Ai, 36 people, and Yeshua starts worrying, and the Jewish Am Yisrael are like, what's going to be? They brought us here. We're going to get destroyed. And Yeshua starts davening to Hashem. And Hashem says, Kumlach, get up. What are you davening for? Figure it out. There's somebody that did an Avera. And all of Am Yisrael are now responsible for it. Why? Because now you're in Eretz Yisrael. No longer are there private sins, right? Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh. Once you come into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you have to find out who it is. It says Yeshua to Hashem, tell me, who did it? Hashem says, I'm not telling you. I'm not going to spread Lashon Hara, which is amazing, because Yeshua is going to find out anyway. But Hashem teaches us, no, I don't want to say it, Hashem said. And therefore we know Yeshua used the Goral, and he came to the Shevet of Yehuda and the family of Zerach. Ultimately, it fell on, as we know, Achan. Achan, who took from the spoils. Achan, who believed in the Rashi Tevos, Olam Keminhago Noheg. The world runs by itself. There's no God. There's no reward and punishment. That was Achan. Yeshua ultimately gets him to admit what he did, and ultimately, after he admits, he is put to death by the rest of Am Yisrael. He is stoned, and they name it Emek Achor. By the way, we did mention that according to the Mesorah, Yeshua ben Nun wrote the first paragraph of Aleinu after the defeat of Yericho, after the walls fell down, after that victory, he wrote the beginning of Aleinu, which is all about the differences between the Jewish people and other nations. That's where we came to our first experience of the other nations seeing us. And Achan wrote the second paragraph of Aleinu. Al Kein Nekaveh. Right? That's the Rashi Tevas of Achan. So that's the Mesorah that we have. It's not in the Gemara. But according to the Mesorah, Yeshua wrote the first half of Aleinu, first paragraph, and Achan wrote the second half of Aleinu. Good, so what happens next? Yeshua says, okay, let's start again. Perek Ches. Let's start again with I. And what does he do? Now he realizes, I'm in the Olam HaTeva now. Yericho was Nace, that was it. Now we have to capture with Teva, with nature. What does he do? He sets up an ambush. He sends a decoy, a couple of Jews, to the front of the city. Most of them go to the back of the city. And the decoy leads the people of Ai out of the city. The Yeshua and the big pack run from behind, set the city on fire, and they encircle them. And the people of Ai realize that they are finished, and there's no coming back to the city. We spoke about a mitzvah in Sefer Dvarim. There's an Isser D'Oraisa to encircle an enemy on all four sides. Not allowed to totally encircle a city. So we discussed, you know, what exactly happened here. It sounds like they encircled all four. So there are a couple of answers that we mentioned. It could be that the Isser doesn't apply to the seven nations of Canaan. It might not apply to a Milchemes mitzvah, right, which this was. Others say might be a difference between self-defense and attacking. This could be considered self-defense, and therefore it was allowed. Either way, they do the ambush, they come out, and they defeat Ai. And that is the first real battle that they fought. At the end of Parakhas, we have Yeshua building a Mizbeach on Har Eval and going through the Brachos and the Klalos. There is a machlokas whether this story happened earlier or not. We know there's a principle in the Torah that the Torah is not written in chronological order. Ein muktama mu'uchar b'Torah. But does that principle apply in Navi too? Rashi and the Radak say yes. This story really happened earlier, right when they crossed the Yarden. It's just written here for some reason, but this is the story that's written about half of the Jews on Har Gerizim, half of the Jews on Har Eval, the Brachas and the Klalos. That's done, said, recorded right here in Parakhes. But really, it might have happened earlier. Okay, moving right along. After these amazing victories, the Givonim. The story of the Givonim in Perek Tes. Who were the Givonim? As we know, a nation that was right there, right near where the Am Yisrael defeated Ai, very close by. But they were scared of the Jews. And therefore, they pretended to be a nation from far away. They put on clothing that looked old, and they dried out water bottles, and everything they took, and they defended, and they tricked Yehoshua and the leaders of the Jews. We're from far away. Please make a treaty with us. We heard how great you are, and you know, we want to be friends with you forever. So Yehoshua says, fine. And ultimately, then they realize that they were tricked, but there's no going back on their promise. Yehoshua, even though halachically the whole thing was mistaken, and therefore it really shouldn't have been binding, but there was a Chil Hashem involved, so they kept their word. The major discussion in the Rishonim was, why did Givonim even have to do this? Why couldn't they just come to Am Yisrael and say, we give up, we want to make peace with you, we want to keep the... So that's the big shiloh that is dealt with. Why couldn't they just do that? So again, different suggestions given. One answer the Rambam says is that they were mistaken. They could have done that. They could have done that, but they didn't realize that the Jews would have accepted them as servants. But they didn't realize they could do that. Other Rishonim say no. Right? Others say maybe Rashi says maybe only in a Melchemes Rishus you're allowed to do that. But Melchemes Mitzvah, seven Amamin, you have to have them leave. Right? Or others say that they could have left before Bnei Yisrael came in. Right, but not afterwards. Right? There's different discussions in the Rishonim why exactly they have to trick, but either way, this is the trick. And the Am Yisrael were upset at the leaders that they didn't do more research. You should have done more research where they're from. But either way, they were tricked, and they kept their word. And these were the Givonim that appear a number of times in history, even in Sefer in the Torah in Nitzavim. Right, there was people who were Givonim. And it could be that Moshe did something to them, Yeshua did something to them, and even the Gemara in Yevamos talks about that David HaMelech also was involved in the Givonim. Good. Weiter. So we have the story of the Givonim. The Givonim are now part of Am Yisrael, but at least there's no war between them. But the problem is this makes other nations very upset. The Givonim were a major nation, and in Perek Yud, the other nations said, oh yeah, let's see what the Jews have in them. And they start deciding to go fight the Givonim. So they go, all these other nations are getting ready to attack the Givonim, and the Givonim, as we know, turn to Yehoshua and say, you gotta help us out, right? We made a treaty with you, and you have to help us out. One of the kings that was in the fight against the Givonim was Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim. We pointed out this was the first time that Yerushalayim is mentioned in Tanakh, right here, Perek Yud, in Yehoshua, the first time it's mentioned, and they ask Yehoshua to help them. And the fascinating two words that are used is, Yehoshua, we need a Yeshua and we need Ezra. Salvation and help. Those are two different words the Malbim pointed out. Yeshua means, we can't do anything, you have to do everything for us. And then Ezra means, we'll try to help out as well. We noted that the two leaders that led Am Yisrael, into Eretz Yisrael was Yehoshua and Ezra. Yehoshua, the first time, Hashem really did everything. Ezra, we went in and we settled the land. So those are the two words that are used, Yehoshua and Ezra. So they ask Yehoshua to help, and we have the miraculous battle of Yehoshua. Yehoshua fights these five kings, and he stops the sun and the moon in mid-orbit. The famous pasuk, it happened about 15 minutes from here. Shemesh v'givon dom, v'yareach v'emek ayalon. Yehoshua says to the sun and the moon, stop! Literally, be silent. But he tells them to stop because their continuing their orbit is their song to Hashem. So if he's saying, stop singing your song, he is saying, in effect, to be silent. So Yeshua says to them to stop. He predicts, Yeshua predicts this event, and it stops in the middle. Large stones come down from heaven and fall onto these these kings that wanted to start up with the Givonim and with Am Yisrael. Chazal say these were the hail balls that stopped in midair in the time of Moshe when he stopped the Makkah of Barad, and now they came down and finished their going down to the earth. And the Navi comments, there was never such a miracle in the history of the world. The question is, what do you mean? There was never such a miracle. So the explanation given is that there was never such a miracle forecast. Yeshua ben Nun commanded the sun and the moon to stop. And they stopped and they listened to him. That's the emphasis of the miracle that happened here. There was never something like this that Yeshua ben Nun was able to stop. So the Navi describes how they traveled and they ran after all these kings. They caught the five kings. They trapped them in a cave, and then Yeshua caught them and killed them in front of their nations to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge and you can't start up with him. Good. Moving right along, we have the last two prakim, Perek Yud Aleph and Perek Yud Beis. This continues the conquerings, right? The first half of Sefer Yehoshua is all about the conquerings of the other nations. Yeshua conquers. Again, this is all by Al Derech HaTeva, right? An unusual action in Perek Yud Aleph when he conquers Chatzor and Madon and these kings of the north, that he takes their horses and he makes them unable to walk. Sounds like mutilation of their feet. Why exactly was this done or allowed? Tzar Balei Chayim, Chas V'Shalom, we don't believe in hurting animals in any way. So why was this allowed? It was a unique type of a message in that they trusted their horses. It was like gods to them. So we had to show them that they're not gods. There's only one God. There's only one God, and don't think your horses. Elav Arecha v'Elav Asusim. V'anachnu v'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Naskir. Right? We follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's happened at Perek Yud Aleph, where more kings are destroyed. And it even says they conquered Goshen, which is unusual. Goshen's in Mitzrayim. What's Goshen doing here? So some say it's a different Goshen. Others say somehow it's a piece of Egypt that stuck out into Eretz Yisrael. Either way, this is the story of the battles that Yehoshua fought. He defeated the giants, the end of Perek Yud Aleph says. And finally, in Perek Yud Beis, we just have the list of the 31 kings that Yehoshua ben Nun conquered overall, including Og. We spoke about Og in Perek Yud Beis, the unique personality in which he was. He lived for hundreds of years. He was around in the time of Noah, in the time of Moshe. That was Og. But all 31 kings are listed. Why do we have to know each and every king? So we mentioned, it's like Dayenu. You have to thank Hashem for each and every detail. Each and every detail is something to give thanks for, not just say thanks for everything. When you focus on details, that shows real Hakaras HaTov. That is all first half of Yehoshua. Then Perek Yud Gimel starts the second half, and that is not the conquering, but the splitting up of the land. So Yeshua Zaken, he was getting old. As we know, that, by the way, took 7 years, working out the math. Again, it's not mufut. That's written, but the following chalukah also took 7 years according to the Masorah. The chalukah sa'aretz. So the first parak in Parak Yud Gimel, we have Yeshua ben Nun re-giving and splitting up Reuven, Gad, and Chati Sheva Menashe. Right, the 2.5 shvatim that got on the east side of the Yarden, Yeshua ben Nun reiterates and says, thank you. He goes through a little bit of Jewish history, but he says, this is the land that you're going to get. This is the land that Moshe Rabbeinu promised to you. And feel free to basically go back. They don't go back. They stay for another 7 years. Above and beyond what they promised Moshe. They promised Moshe we'll only go in to be there for the conquering. But they stay because they felt we don't want to go back to our lands until all of Am Yisrael goes back to their lands. So they stay. And Yeshua, along the way, again, most of the parak is reviewing the portions that they were given, and it also throws in a little bit of history, including that we killed Bilam, and this is an interesting pasuk in that. Bilam is called the magician in our pasuk. Bilam ben Ba'ar HaKosem, the magician. The Ramban points out in Chumash that he wasn't really a Navi. He got Navu at a certain moment in time for the good of Am Yisrael, but he was a magician, right? And that's what he was good at, and that's why here he's called a Kosem. But Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh are designated to them in Perek Yud Gimel. Emphasizing again, Sheva Levi gets no land. We're about to split up all the Shvatim, not Sheva Levi. They're going to get cities at the end, but they're not going to get land. Perek Yud Dalit. So we start off. Who gets first? Yehuda gets first. Yehuda is always the first. Why? The Gemara says he was a Baal Tshuva, right? Last week's Parsha with Tamar. He gets first. And his portion, as we know, is the south part of Eretz Yisrael. The south includes not so south. We discussed then in Perek Yedalad what is the halacha of Eilat relating to mitzvos hatzulias ba'aretz being part of Eretz Yisrael, right? But this is all about Yehuda. Yehuda gets his portion. There is one famous person in Yehuda that gets a special portion, and that is Kalev. Kalev ben Yefuneh comes to Yoshua and says, Kalev says, Yeshua, remember us? We were the only two Meraglim. Right, I'm 85 years old now. Moshe promised me Chevron. Could I please have Chevron now? Yeshua says, fine, you got Chevron. You got Chevron. Not actually the city, because Chevron was one of the Arei Miklat, as we read later on, but the suburbs around the city. He was given that, and Yehoshua ben Nun says, it can be given to him. That is Yudalit. Perek Tezvav is the rest of Shevet Yehuda. Rest of Shevet Yehuda is given the entire area, including a portion of Yerushalayim. We know Yerushalayim was shared by Yehuda and Binyamin. Yehuda got the southern part, Binyamin got the northern part. The Mizbeach was even right on the border. The southeastern corner of the Mizbeach did not have a base like it had all around the other sides, because that border was right where Binyamin's Shevet ended. The entire Mizbeach had to be in Binyamin. Right, that was the Masorah that we had. So the Yehudim and Yamin went right through Yerushalayim, as we know, is mentioned in the Psukim. So that's Yehuda right here in Perek Tezvav getting his Nachla. It goes through all of the portions of Yehuda. At the end, it does mention that Kalev himself needed some help conquering Chevron. So he says, whoever conquers Chevron can marry my daughter, Achsa. And who stood up and did it? Asniel ben Kenaz, who we are going to get back to, Beth Hashem, in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. He makes another appearance there in the beginning of Shoftim, but Asniel ben Kenaz, the brother of Kalev, right? They shared one parent. The brother of Kalev helps him, and therefore becomes his son-in-law, right? Marries Achsa. Chazal say maybe this is all a spiritual conquering, that he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. It's all metaphoric, but that is what the Gemara says. So Yehuda is the first Shevet, after Reuben, Gad, and Menashe. After that, Perek Tezayin comes Yosef. Why does Yosef get next? Explain a number of Mefarshim, the two Mashiachs, Mashiach ben David and Mashiach ben Yosef. So that's why Yosef gets next, because he's the next one. You could also say he's the Bechor. He was meant to be the real Bechor. Either way, he's the one that gets next. And who within Yosef gets first? Ephraim. Ephraim is the first to get. Sometimes Ephraim and Manasseh are considered one. Sometimes they're considered two Shvatim. We discuss on the Choshen, in the Nachala. These are the two people who we give brachas about every Friday night. Yisibcha Elokim Kefraim v'Chemenashe. Why are those two the ones that we want our children to be like? We gave a number of answers. One of the great ones was, these were the two first two brothers in history that did not fight. Cain and Hevel, Right? Yitzchak and Yishmael, Yaakov and Esav, the brothers and Yosef, the first ones that didn't fight were Cain and Hevel. That's the bracha we give to our children every Friday night, you know, that they shouldn't fight and they should get along with each other. So Yosef, Ephraim gets, and Tezayin, Perek Yud Zayin, Menashe gets the other half of Shevet Yosef, and the psukim described that Agora was done. Even though, well, we know which Yosef's chelik was, so once you give out half, the other half should Memela go to Menashe? The answer is no. What was going on here was just not just a splitting up of the land, but a sanctification through the splitting up. So it all had to happen through the Goral, through special lottery that was done with the Aron and the Urim Vetumim. So therefore, there was a Goral. Menashe was given his portion, including who are the most famous five women from that period of time? The daughters of Slavchad, the men of Slavchad, who complained and then said, "We want a portion of Eretz Yisrael." And Moshe Rabbeinu said, "You're right, correct. And you're going to get it," so they are given their portion here. The only time that anybody complains in Sefer Yehoshua about their portion is right here. The B'nai Menashe say, "It's not big enough for us. We have a huge Shevet." Right? If you do the math, they expanded 70% since they went out of Mitzrayim. "It's not big enough." Yeshua says to them, "I can't really help you because Hashem made the splittings up. But you see that big forest over there? You know, go conquer that, cut down that forest. You'll have more land." And the Gemara says, maybe it doesn't mean a forest literally. It means if you have a lot of brachas, don't scream about it and say it in public. Keep your brachas. You have a lot of kids? Wonderful. Keep it to yourself. Don't flaunt it. Don't say, "Oh, we have such a big place." Right? Go to the Ya'ar, cover up your brachas. So who has so far? Yehuda, Menashe, and Ephraim. Then we have Perek Yud Ches. Bnei Yisrael gather in Shiloh. Shiloh is introduced to us. So Perek Yud is Yerushalayim. Perek Yud Ches is Shiloh, right? Chai. Bnei Yisrael start living again when they set up the Mishkan in Shiloh. Yeshua ben Nun gathers the seven Shvatim that as of yet have not gotten Nachla. And he says, "Guys, Bnei Yisrael, you have to go out and give me seven portions and I'm going to split it up for you." Why didn't they get it themselves already? So Chazal say that they dafka didn't want to get their portions yet. Why? The Mesudas David says, because they felt that if they each get their portions, they're going to lose some achdus. They're not going to fight for each other. So they'd rather stay together as one. Says Yeshua, no. You have to be makadish, sanctify all of Eretz Yisrael, and don't worry, you're going to stay ba'achdus, because we have a centralized location now. We have Shiloh, they set up the Mishkan in Shiloh, and that's going to be the heart of Am Yisrael. It's going to be there in Shevet Binyamin's Nachla, and therefore, don't be scared about getting your Nachlas. So therefore, in Perek Yutes, we have all of the other Nachlas given out, Shimon, Zvul, and Yisachar, Asher, Naphtali, Dan, and who's the last one? Who's the last one to get Nachla? In Perek Yutes, Yoshua ben Nun himself. Yeshua is the last one to take a portion. He takes a portion in the end of Perek Yutes in Timnah Serach, in Har Ephraim, in his Shevet, and he goes and lives there. And then there's a Summa Pasuk, Perek Yutes. So again, Yud Gimel through Yutes, or is the Chalukah. And the end it says, these are the Nachlas that were given out, Asher Nichalu, that Elazar and Yeshua ben Nun gave out. That Pasuk is a crucial Pasuk, because that Pasuk is the source of the Halacha of Hefker, Besen, Hefker. That the rabbis have power over monetary law, and they could give money from whichever Jew to whichever other Jew they want. The real Besen. And therefore, that's learned out from this Pasuk. Perek Yutes Pasuk Nun Aleph, just like Elazar and Yeshua gave out the portions, so to every Besen in history. So that's part two of the Sefer. And then we get to the last five Prakim, and that is the third part. Perachaf, Vaydabar Hashem El Yoshua Leimar. Hashem says to Yoshua, now you have to give out the Arei Miklat, the six cities of refuge. But the first word in Perachaf, the Gemara picks up on, Vaydabar Hashem El Yoshua Leimar. We never find a pasuk like that except in the Torah. Vaydabar, yes, because this has to do with a mitzvah that was unfinished. This is Arei Miklat. And therefore, Hashem has to use a lashon of Vayedaber to Yoshua, because he has to set up the six Arei Miklat that were going to be for people who killed B'Shogeg. Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, already set up the three on the east side of the Yarden, but they didn't work, Chazal tell us. They didn't work or function as Arei Miklat until the three Yoshua ben Nun did. And we spoke about a lot about that Moshe Rabbeinu, even though he only could do a half a mitzvah, What he did wasn't effective yet, he still did it. Because he knows a mitzvah is a mitzvah. Even if I only have a little bit of a mitzvah to do, I'm going to do it. So Moshe Rabbeinu already designated the Ari Miklat even before they were ready to be used. So the six Ari Miklat are designated. They're listed off here in Perek Chaf, three on the east side, three on the west side. So what's left? There's only one portion of Jews who didn't get a Nachla yet, and those are the Levium. The Levium, so the 42 cities of the Levium in Perachaf Aleph are given out. Interestingly, it's counted as two separate mitzvos by the Rambam, by the Chinuch. Setting up Ari Miklat and setting up the 42 cities of the Levium. 6 and 42. Even though all 48 afforded protection, but there's a difference in halacha between them, which we won't get into now again, but that is why there are two separate mitzvahs, but Perachaf Aleph, they're given out all 42 cities. Why are they last and not first? The Levium. They should be first. Why are they last? The answer is because the mitzvah is for us to give them the cities out of our land. So first we have to get our land, and then we have to, so to speak, sacrifice and give them some of the cities. If we didn't get the land yet, then it's not a giving. It's just, you know, they're taking, but it has to be that they have to take from us, and that is why first the rest of Am Yisrael get, and then the Levium are given their portions. Good. Perachah Vez, Yeshua ben Nun says, okay, now Reuven got a Menashe, now you can really go back. Now you can really go back, you know, you've done more than I've asked you to do. Now you can go back to Eber HaYaradin, but make sure you keep all the mitzvos. Make sure, even though you're not in Eretz Yisrael proper, you know, you follow God. And they said 100%, 100% is fine. And they go, they stop off in Shiloh on the way back, and then they go back to their land. But before they go back to their land, they build a huge mizbeach right next to the Yaradin. And the rest of Am Yisrael hear about this, and they say, why are they building a mizbeach? Right? Don't they know the Shiloh? You can't build any more mizbeachs when Shiloh is built. So what happens, as we know, they send Pinchas to go see what's going on. And they were about to go to war against them. There was about to be a civil war. They send Pinchas. What's going on? And Reuben and Gad say to them, nothing. We're not building this to sacrifice on. Why do you think it's huge? We're building it as a zecher, as a remembrance that don't forget us in a few generations. Just because we don't live here doesn't mean that we're not part of Am Yisrael. So you see, we build it as a remembrance. And Pinchas says, really? Wonderful. And he goes back and gives the report. Why Dafko was Pinchas sent? So the Gemara says in Zvachim. Because at least according to one opinion, Pinchas, what was he known for? He was known as a zealot, as a kanoi, what he did in Parshas Pinchas. So now he proves he only did that L'shem Shemayim. Because what did he do here? He made peace. He made peace amongst Jews. And that's ultimately what was his purpose in his original act of kanois as well. And Mr. Yaakov, Rebbe Yaakov Kamenetsky, makes that point in the end of Sefer Bereishis and Parshas Vayechi. So they go back, and then we have finally the last pep talk that Yeshua ben Nun gives. The last two prakim, Parachav Gimel, he gives a Sichas Musar about Schar Va'onesh. He says, if you follow what these other nations are doing, if these follow what is Zara, then you're not going to last. It's going to be bad news for you. If you follow Hashem, it's going to be awesome. And Am Yisrael respond and say, for sure, we want to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't worry, we're going to follow. And nothing to worry about, because Yehoshua ben Nun knew that after he dies, you know, things might start going downhill. But he gives them the pep talk. You have to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And finally, in Perachav Dalid, in the last parak, he gathers all of Am Yisrael and goes through, first of all, Jewish history, from Avram Avinu, or we noted even from Terach, we mentioned in the last year, he starts with Terach, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, all the way through Yericho, through everything that's happened. He says, this is what Hashem has done for you. And now it's time for you to do for him. And make sure you finish conquering the rest of the people in this country, and fear Hashem, serve him properly, get rid of any of Avodah Zarah, and it's up to you, says Yeshua. Yeshua says, if you want to follow Avodah Zarah, that's your choice. But I know I'm with God. V'anochi u'beisin avodas Hashem. I know I'm with Hashem. Which means, we learn from there, that it doesn't matter what's going on around the person. They have to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu themselves. They have to be that Eved Hashem that Hashem demands. And they answer, yes, we will do it. We accept. We accept to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Tosfos in Shabbos Peches said that this wasn't a full acceptance of all the mitzvahs again. It wasn't like Shavuos or Purim, but it was an acceptance of Avodah Zarah, at least, to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the best of their abilities. And I neglected to mention that Yeshua had this whole meeting in Shechem, and they brought the Aron there. Right, brought the Aron there. Which Aron we discussed? But he brought the Aron there. Shechem was in Ephraim, so that's why they was in Bnei Yosef. And therefore, this was the last meeting. So after that, he sends them home after they accept. Yeshua goes back to Timnath Serach, and he dies at the age of 110 years old. Chazal said maybe 10 years was taken off for a certain reason that we discussed during the Shiurim. But as we mentioned, here he's called Eved Hashem, and the Pasuk relates that Bnei Yisrael served Hashem all the days of Yehoshua. They buried him in Timnath Serach, north of Har Goash, which, according to Chazal, might have meant that they didn't eulogize him properly, like they did to Moshe, and they lived to Aaron. But either way, the Navi ends off by saying they served Hashem all the days of Yeshua, and they buried Yosef's bones in Shechem, because that's where he was sold, that's where he was brought back to. And then what happens? Elazar dies, and Pinchas buries him. So now, really, we are two generations removed from the Torah. Moshe and Yeshua are gone, Aaron and Elazar are gone, and a new stage of history is about to start. We did mention, who wrote Sefer Yehoshua? Yehoshua wrote Sefer Yehoshua, except for the last five psukim, because it says Yehoshua died. He couldn't have written that. So Elazar wrote those last five psukim, but the last pasuk, it says Elazar died. So Pinchas wrote the last pasuk of Sefer Yehoshua, and it gets us ready and sets the stage for the next Sefer Shoftim. Okay, we will stop here.